warm up. Let's warm up.
Hello and welcome to Liberty Southwest podcast number 52. It's unbelievable. We're back after like a 6 month hiatus. It's just Eric and myself tonight. The wonderful Eric Taylor and myself, Matthew Winter. We will be talking about nothing in particular tonight. We're literally trying to get things set up again after this hiatus and getting ready to start recording on a regular basis again, and we'll see what we can get out of this. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you.
So we were talking a little bit previous to starting the recording, and you brought up a very controversial man at this point in time. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'd like to hear a little bit about what you think about him. Front runner, I think. Front runner at this point, Donald Trump for the Republican Party.
He's doing what he needs to do to win. He's got.
What do you mean by that?
I think his political strategy. He's throwing as much red meat at the widest swath of primary voter that he possibly can. So he wants to win. So he's hitting talking points that will get him the most primary and caucus votes. So you can kind of go across, you know, his various talking points. And in my mind, it's a concerted, calculated effort to hit the most possible people in order to get elected. So that's what you,
yeah,
that is, it's a, I mean, when you're in politics, the whole idea, right, is to win. That's kind of the point of running.
I think there are some candidates that say just to prove a point, they're going to run.
Yeah. Most of the time, they
whether
don't
or
win.
Not that's a good strategy, I don't know. So here's something that I'm interested to hear your opinion on. So recently I've heard conservatives say something, and I think it's based quite a bit on the whole Trump phenomena, because Trump up until this point was a Democrat, right? I mean, I think most people assumed he was a Democrat.
Well, I think he's played it always, and he said it, that he's contributed to, he's really politically agnostic as far as parties are concerned. So Democrats, Republicans, he ran, what was the party that Jesse Ventura,
well, he ran through? As an independent party, I think is what. Yes,
no,
he
wasn't independent. He explored running in 2000 under I can look it up on Google under a
I'm doing the same thing.
Yeah.
We'll see. I think we'll both find it at the same time, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I don't know that any of you listeners know this, but Eric and I are both IT guys, so we spend the majority of our time on Google, trying to figure things out.
On the Google? Yeah.
Let's see here. Let me run ads.
I am not.
Oh, what is it? Views on political parties. Let's see here. Ventura, who ran on a Reform Party ticket.
Reform Party. Yep. So in.
Go.
Yep, that's it. So in 2000, he explored running under the Reform Party ticket and didn't end up actually running. And he thought a lot about, I think, about running in 2012. But he has, I think there are some people that say he has leaned heavily Democrats or liberal or progressive in the past, right? Is that kind of
And
kind of
I
where.
kind of feel like that's exactly where Trump leans. I think he's a New York. If you're going to call him a reform party, which already is a moderate, basically centrist from every perspective, I think Trump is still going to lean to the left, as far as I'm concerned, anyway. So here's an interesting thing that I read recently, which really gives me some concern for what's happening in the political party process right now. And it's no longer a Republican versus Democrat. It's no longer a left versus right argument that's happening anymore. And now it's a nationalist versus globalist fight that's going on, where you have someone like a Bernie Sanders, who would be much like the bitch that's in Germany, who's currently negating every opportunity possible to be proud of the country that she's running, to where you have the dichotomy of a Trump, where Trump is currently trying to erect borders and create a really patriotic background, meaning like he's super proud of the US and he believes that the US will only be strong based on certain things that will happen, that he's trying to drive forward. Like, I think that's where he's coming from. I don't know how you feel about that.
I think actually he agrees a lot with Angela Merkel, and he pulls a lot of his a lot of I see a lot of xenophobia in his rhetoric. So
Well,
protect the country.
what would make you feel like Angela Merkel is xenophobic? I feel like she's accepting every single possible immigrant at this point in time into her country.
Well, what I didn't necessarily say that Merkel's xenophobic, but he's pulling a lot of his stances from the fact that there specifically his nationalistic stances, that there is a lot of people in Northern Europe view the Muslims in general as a problem because they're. A lot of them have open border policies, and Muslims are coming in and creating quite the opposition for politicians in general. So they're bringing up their own to run for office and actually gaining some traction. And countries like Norway, Sweden, Denmark, Germany, they're quite threatened by the fact that you have essentially an insurgent Muslim population that's coming in there. And to my mind, he's alluded to that a few times. To my mind, he's trying to prevent something like that from happening in the United States. That to me looks like his motivation. Politics is, like I said before, there's some pandering, you want to win, et cetera. But the underlying motivation looks to be, hey, we don't want to be co-opted by Muslims. We don't want Sharia law or anything along those lines. And that to me seems to be
Right.
the motivation that, when he talks about strong borders, keep, all Syrians out or, all Muslims out. The concern about what is starting to happen in Northern Europe happening in the United States seems to be where he's coming from. That's just what I've seen.
Yeah, I think it's very interesting because when you talk about the refugees that are coming now to the US, there's a huge, huge process in trying to get them through and to making it so they can actually come here. They have at least a three-step process where they're twice going through the ringer with the NSA and other groups like them. I can't remember who it is right now. I know the FBI is one, and I believe the NSA is another. And then I think they go through a third check with the NSA right when they're about to come here. And I know that the people who are coming here are very unlikely to fit into the demographic that he's super freaked out about, which I feel like he's pandering to a group in order to create an issue here that may not necessarily be an issue, meaning like he's fighting for something that might not actually be a problem. What do you feel about that?
Well, I think a lot of people think, specifically within the Republican Party, it's a whole another conversation, the hardcore grassroots activists, there's a significant amount that are concerned about Middle Easterners in general. And there's also a considerable portion of the party that genuinely sees the United States as being in decline, and they're afraid of losing their jobs to individuals overseas. And
I mean, as an IT guy, what do you think about that?
I don't think it's as much of an issue as what people like Trump are making it to be. Specifically, if we talk about information technology and robotics, and a lot of the things, you have a very well-educated workforce, white-collar IT workforce that I would argue is better than any other in the world. And
you mean in the U.S., right?
In the United States, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, and I think he's not preaching to someone like you or I. He's preaching to the blue collar worker who's scared. And there are a lot of people that are scared. And fear is in marketing or in politics is one of the most effective vehicles to be successful in whatever endeavor you're trying to accomplish. So his politics is a strategy of fear. And people glom onto that, and his politics is also a strategy of authority, which I would argue you have two strong authority type figures on the right and on the left. On the right, you have Donald Trump, and on the left, you have Bernie Sanders. People are scared, and they want somebody to lead the way. You know, and you have Trump, who's fascist, xenophobic, and Sanders, who's a socialist. But people seem to be glomming on to those two because they're strong and speaking, you know, a rhetoric of fear. That's what I've observed.
I would say at this point that I do not agree that Bernie Sanders is a socialist.
Okay.
I think if you talk about his long-term viewpoint, his history as a politician, he comes out far more on the communist side of things than on the socialist side of things. I think the only reason why he has as much traction at this point is because he's calling himself a socialist. But if you look at what his goals have been over the years, he's not looking for a socialist republic. He wants a communist, complete redistribution of wealth society, where everybody is paid according to their need as opposed to their ability. And I mean, what do you feel about that? Do you feel like that's the same thing, or am I like way off the handle here?
I guess, you know, through he's kind of risen up the ranks, right, through Vermont, and, you know, he's, to me, hasn't been, and from what I've read, watched, heard, he hasn't been an outright communist. He certainly is for, you know, a significant amount of government control, and he's for redistribution of wealth. But as far as full-on Marxist communism, I guess I just haven't seen that. I'd be interested to, you know, understand what you're referencing there. But he certainly is, you know, I guess the parallel I was trying to draw is both of them are strong figures who are presenting themselves as someone that's going to help the individual who's scared of outsiders, who's scared of the future, and wants somebody to make it right. Right? That's kind of the comparison that I was trying to draw.
Sure.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think a lot of what my opinion has been drawn from is media coverage, and we both know how unreliable media coverage is these days. There's, you know, very little that you can rely on and have a real informed opinion. You've got to really dig to get any kind of information out of the anything that you're going to find online. One article that I would draw attention to on the New York Post, it was on the 16th of this month, and it's something that I read that literally it's titled "Don't Be Fooled by Bernie Sanders, He's a Diehard Communist," and it's from the New York Post, which to me it's that's a hell of a statement coming from the Post.
Right.
I find that you know, usually they're going to be a more socialist leaning paper, and they go back and they investigate his history, and I would say so it's at www.newyorkpost.com/2016/01/16/don't-be-fooled-by-bernie-sanders-he's-without-an-apostrophe-a-diehard-communist. And if you want to read it for yourself, go ahead. The article itself is fairly damning. After I read the whole thing, I really have grown uncomfortable with what he is doing based on what he did when he was younger. And I know personally, based on things that I have said in my political history, that my younger self has things that may not be something I agree with today. But this is not just one thing that he has said. It's been repeatedly that he has said things that really, really kind of damn him. Like in 1985, he traveled to Manuga to celebrate the rise in power of the Marxist-Leninist and Sandinista government, and he called it a heroic revolution, meaning like he undermined everything that the U.S. policy at that time had to say. And it was during the Reagan administration, so he basically ran to the very far side of any type of politics in the U.S. I mean, in the 1950s, he'd have been arrested and brought to a camp. That's what level he went to. So he scares me. Sanders scares me genuinely. And I think for a good reason. And I think he's got the reputation that causes that problem.
So getting back to, I suppose I was reading through this article, and it does, there are some damning, pieces of information.
Oh, the one that I just mentioned, the one from the New York Post.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's disturbing. Like, as you read through it, every paragraph, you know, kind of pisses you off a little more.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't. It'd be hard for me to believe that he's going to be a significant challenge for Clinton, but.
That's the hard part for me, too. If Clinton wins, we're talking about a woman who has repeatedly lied to the American people. To the extent that she should be in prison, she has committed federal crimes, felonies, literal felonies. She's brought emails onto a non-government-controlled server that do not have the controls that the government requires, which is a felony. And she's getting away with it at this point. As far as I'm concerned, she's getting away with it. I have no idea how this has happened, that she can get to this point and not have been arrested. I can only say corruption. That's it.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like she's going to be touched by that.
Yeah, and it's really unbelievable when you get to this point in an election process. I mean, we're talking deeply into the primaries, and we've got a who could be destroyed by something like this. And what we're looking at now is a candidate who's looking great as far as things are concerned. How could we get to this point? It just doesn't make any sense at all.
How do you why do you think she's able to disassociate herself from that?
I think we're at the point right now where corruption outweighs everything else. I think talk about Benghazi. We've talked about this before. We've talked about Benghazi before on our show. Yep. And that was, what, 6 months ago that we talked about this. And we've gone over what happened there. And for one person to be able to get away with the absolutely incriminating evidence that comes along with what they have perpetrated, it's astonishing. And it has to be, at its very core, root corruption. There's no way it can be anything but corruption.
Yeah, that's certainly a strong possibility, right? And to me, looks like she has the best chance. President's just national salesman anyway, but she has the best chance of winning. I'm really, I don't know, I am surprised. Oh, no, I'm not surprised. It's discouraging to me to see two people like Trump and Sanders gain so much enthusiasm.
Is that crazy?
It is crazy. But it just, I've read a few articles. People just like authority figures. They like strong authority figures. And both those two are just galvanizing, a sentiment that's there in significant numbers. I mean, it's well over 50% of people want somebody who's essentially a strong man, right? That'll make sure things are okay. And when you look at, the economics behind Trump's plans, he's essentially talking about forcing companies to change their policies to make sure they keep jobs in the United States rather than utilizing the global economy and, stoking fear behind those practices. To me, it's just, it's interesting how people can say, hey, yeah, that's a good idea. But
I mean, I do see a couple of instances where the H-1B visa has been abused and should be addressed. And I don't know that the president needs to be the person who addresses something like this. I mean, we've read articles repeatedly recently about Disney and how many employees had to train their H-1B replacements so Disney could pay them less and make money over time based on paying an H-1B less money. Companies like Infosys, Tata Consultancy Services, Accenture all thrive on these H-1B visas, which allow people who are, let's be honest, very mildly trained, coming from India, who will, once on arrival, sit down and be studious and try to understand what they're working on, but are in no way capable of replacing the technology workers that they're replacing. And I think that needs to be addressed. However, I don't think it's as big of a problem as it needs to be talked about from, the supreme executive in the United States.
Yeah, and he does a heck of a job drumming up the fear around that. And I guess, my opinion on anything in the, in that realm, insourcing, outsourcing, HB1 visas, etc., is generally if you keep the market as open and free as possible, you'll create the the highest amount of efficiencies. So, yeah, I don't. I guess that's kind of the extreme free market sentiment that I have is, let those people come over and try and take the jobs. And
Which,
if
you
you
know what,
know,
to be honest, as another IT guy, I'd say,
yeah.
yeah, go ahead, come over.
Yeah.
I know like as far as talent, we're destroying them
Yeah.
by far. But when they start getting into companies that are we're talking like 25,000 employees, well, yeah, you can replace 100 employees with 400 that are going to cost you less than they are right now, and that's a golden parachute.
Yeah.
And I think something like that should be addressed. I'm not trying to modify the free market. I do think that replacing workers, and this is hard for me too, because I also do think that allowing a company to go ahead and hire a bunch of people who can't do the job is fine, because they're going to get screwed in the end. But I also do feel like the abuse of the program should be addressed. I'm not saying that they need to completely end it, but I do think that taking someone who is extremely efficient in their job and having them train their replacement just because they're less expensive and coming from another country because we allowed this program to start, I don't think that's necessarily the best thing for the US at this time. But at the same time, I still want to see them compete on a global market and just say, hey, if they want to hire these people, go ahead. We're going to beat them anyway. Which at this point in my career, I've destroyed them. I make way more than they ever would when they come here, and there's never been a company that's ever been like, oh yeah, we could replace you by an Indian worker. I have seen other people replaced, and sometimes I feel like it's wrong.
Yeah, it's tough when you see that happen to some it happen to someone. But on the flip side, I think I don't know. Generally, if you allow government regulation to dictate that, it just creates
You're
moral
right.
hazard and malfeasance and all kinds of
Yep, you're right.
it
You're
like
right.
affirmative action is a good thing you can look at where it just distorts the marketplace more than it's worth following those types of regulations. But
You're absolutely right. I have no real solution for it.
yeah, because once you
I
get
just see companies
government.
make bad decisions and try to, influence that. But I don't think the government's the right place to do it.
Yeah, and that's only, I mean, if you want to use force, that's the only way to do it. Otherwise, you're not going to enact any change. You're not going to have, altruistic companies say, hey, we're going to have a X quota for nationals or expats or whatever. So that
Right.
doesn't happen. So yeah,
Right.
that's one of those in my view that has kind of righted itself over the last number of years. There have there's been situations I've observed where you have a lot of H-1B visas come in and take jobs and they don't do a good job and then you end up just hiring native born citizens and they do a better job. They're paid a bit more, but that's to me that's always the way you'd like to see it, to have the
Right.
you
Yeah,
know
absolutely. I
yeah.
mean, there's no doubt in my mind that we've overdriven the amount of talent that can come from other countries at this point. There's not enough there. We've got so many companies that want these employees that quote unquote are doing services that American employees can't do properly, quote unquote. This is the purpose of the H-1B visa,
Yeah.
and I think 5 years ago we used up that talent pool, and they're now coasting, trying to maintain based on this population of people who can't really do the job.
Yeah. So, it kind of gets back to, the xenophobic type of attitude that Trump or, you know, Sanders, in my mind, both those campaigns should be espousing, you know, I'm libertarian and, you know, strong libertarian, espousing self-sufficiency, self-education, upward mobility, that somebody, you know, like a Rand Paul does hit on every day. But that's the truth of the matter is that, that from, you know, with most people, that's not a message that they care to hear and something that they don't glom onto. So to me, and you know, in some ways,
if we talk like that, just real quick, the opinion of the unskilled labor market, mm-hmm. where we've got Mexicans who do jobs here in the U.S. who are unskilled, and there's a market there where they have illegally immigrated in most cases, and the same argument applies. Like if you can't compete with the person who's here for that purpose, then you know what are you doing? Like you should probably make yourself more marketable so that you don't have to compete with those people. Become a construction supervisor instead of one of the people who have to be a workman.
Yeah, and I think a large segment of both the populist and kind of the right wing side, the populist leftist right wing conservative side, they for whatever reason, that's not something that happens, you know, in their work life. And
right.
They may or may not be interested in doing that. You know, that's just a dynamic that's there. And, you know, looking at how that influences politics is, maybe it's always been that way, but for me, it's somewhat disconcerting.
You know, and the worst part for me as a libertarian, and I know some of the things that I've said tonight do not sound libertarian, but in the end, my rationale does come around to the libertarian side. I can't argue with it. It's true logic. The worst part to me is right now, with the exception of Rand Paul, who really doesn't have a lot going for him as far as electability this cycle. He just doesn't have the following that Rand ever had. Or, I mean, Ron ever had. We're looking at a situation where we have two really shitty candidates, and we could say three. I mean, Sanders, Clinton, and Trump are awful. I have no faith that any of the three will do anything good for this country. And as a result, I'm at a loss. I usually get super involved in the process. I mean, so do you, Eric. I mean, at this point, do you have any candidate you'd want to stand up for?
Rand Paul. Yeah, there's...
If he got some traction, right? I mean, if there's some realistic... he may have stand a chance of winning. Like, yeah, but at this point, are you willing to stand up for him before that?
Before that? What do you mean?
Well, I mean, like, right now, I really feel like he's only sitting at about, like, a 15% voters like from the Republican Party that would be willing to back him. I feel like he's really been, you know, marginalized just like his father was. So I'm skeptical whether or not it's even worth it to get involved.
Yeah, he doesn't have a chance. There are certainly a very small percentage of people who are energized and participating with what's going on in his campaign, but it's a situation where it's just not there for him. So to answer your question, I will spend, you know, I do when I do talk to if politics comes up. In the, you know, I typically don't bring the conversation up, but if it comes up and we're talking about a presidential election, I've been a strong proponent of Rand, and a lot of people, I talked to a lot of people who aren't who may not even know what libertarianism is. Probably the vast majority of people I have these conversations with don't know what it is. And I, you know, go over, well, this is why, you know, I think this guy is a fantastic candidate. And if an individual is, you know, if they're motivated enough to dig a little bit into more of what he's about, from what I've seen, you know, you just take somebody who has no opinion one way or the other. If they do take the time to check it out, they're like, yeah, this is a great guy, but people like him don't get elected. So, you know, that's typically,
it's unfortunate.
Yeah, the arc of that type of conversation. It's, you know, going from, yeah, seems good, but that's not going to happen. So,
yeah, it's a long conversation that you eventually end up in, and while people might agree with you 100% of the time, it still doesn't matter because there's not enough people that we can kind of rally behind it. What's really great about the Libertarian Party, at least that I've come to know, is their organization is really, really, really strong. I mean, they teach everybody how to be a great activist on a local level so that they can influence things in the local election very well, grabbing all the people who agree with them, turning them into an alliance that can, you know, push a particular candidate into getting an endorsement, and that's just wonderful. I think they do a great job at it. But I think after you get past that real local level, it's very hard to convince the general population to jump on board with what we've done in the past.
Yeah, the interest level just really isn't there. You look at, and that's also kind of a common theme. Even conservatives who are behind Donald Trump, I mean, they're not really interested in shrinking the government. They're interested in continuing to get the benefits that they are getting. And he speaks to a strong military, growing the military, and, you know, of course, on the socialist/communist/progressive side, Sanders doesn't speak to actually shrinking the government or anything along those lines. So it's just a subset of the population that's even interested in that. From what I've observed, it's under 20%. It's well under 20% people who care to even go into those areas. So.
And that's frustrating. I know it's been 4 years now since I really dove into this arena. It's after 4 years of working hard and trying to influence things, it's frustrating to see the results that we see these days out of our efforts. And you know what, though? I'm not going to say they're for naught. I think over time, there's going to be a big desire for what we deliver. I think there's going to be a great desire for the libertarian platform, because logic eventually has to prevail. Once things start to fall apart, and when they try to talk to people about what's going on, and I mean just anybody, they will have a conversation with their friends. Eventually they will meet a libertarian and they will explain, logically, this is the way things work. And there's going to be very little argument available to say this isn't the way things work. And I know this sounds like really cliche, but I mean, I don't see a real reasonable argument against what we talk about. I think people are mostly frustrated with just not having somebody who they can rally behind with the reasoning that we provide. And eventually that has to get to a point where people are like, no, this is something that I want to get behind. And I don't care if it's a third party, quote unquote, candidate, somebody who's not a front runner. I think they're going to get to the point where this is what they want. And I feel like it just has to happen.
Yeah, that I think there still is a lack of, and that's one of the challenges. I think probably you and I have both run into quite a few people who you say to yourself, that would be somebody who's probably pretty well qualified and I could support and running for X, Y, or Z office. They're just not interested. And, having, good people have the interest in doing that, who have the charisma and personality to win is important. And there isn't amongst the libertarian philosophy, there isn't that will to power there for the most part. So that's one of the issues. But kind of getting back to what you're saying, I think, we were talking about IT. I think technology is going to be a disruptive libertarian force in itself. I mean, it's, at its core, that's what it is. It's an anarchic, libertarian, type of methodology for the most part. So you can look across the sharing economies, and we've talked about this in the past. And to me, to a large extent, a lot of what we're talking about probably will be done outside of political circles.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's gonna be definitely a grassroots. And when I say grassroots, I mean sitting around the bonfire grassroots style of education that has to take place in order for a real, real influential amount of progress for the Libertarian Party. And not even necessarily Libertarian Party candidates, but just libertarian
Small
leaning.
L's wherever they're at.
Exactly. But I think we're starting to get up against our hard limit for our show here. You want to get
So getting back, so what's your thought on Trump? What's going to happen with Trump?
I think Trump's gonna burn in flames.
You think so? What's
I
going to
don't
happen?
think he's got a chance in hell of surviving both primaries and getting into being an actual front runner.
Is he going to
I
make
think
it?
we're gonna see somebody.
Is he going to be nominated? Will he be nominated?
I'm not sure. I think Paul Ryan has a great chance. And saying that, like, I'm not happy about that. I think there's other candidates who are less crazy who are
Do you
going to
mean
get
Ted
the
Cruz or
nomination.
Marco Rubio? What do you mean, Paul Ryan?
I'm sorry. Hang on a second here. Marco Rubio and Paul Cruz. Hang on.
Rubio, is that who
Wait,
you're thinking
I
of?
gotta figure out who I was talking about here. Let's see here. You go ahead and talk your part, and I will figure out who I was talking about here.
Yeah, so yeah, Paul Ryan, Speaker of the House. And I was thinking that, maybe you're talking about a broker convention, you'd be
Actually,
nominated from the
I might have
floor.
been talking about Paul Ryan. Actually, that's probably who I was thinking about. And to disclaim things, I have not been researching politics in any kind of a strong way since we stopped the show.
Sure.
So, my apologies.
So you were thinking of Paul Ryan?
Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, could happen. He would be, if there's a brokered convention, he'd be nominated from the floor. But yeah, we'll see. Donald Trump he's interesting, that's for sure. He's a beacon of hope. That's how you can put
Beacon of
it.
hope.
With
Or
that,
it's like a beacon I don't want to follow.
it's a beacon you don't want to follow. Yeah. And with that, we'll cue up the Freddy Freeloader music. Hopefully, you can hear it.
Love Freddy Freeloader.
Yes, it is okay.
Well, sir, it has been a pleasure. And we're at least I'm happy to be back at doing this for you.
Yeah, it's good. Yep.
And I'm really happy to be back at this. And so this has been Liberty Southwest podcast number 52. And yeah, we're happy to be back. You guys have a great night.
Later on.